Hey, it's Brian Curtis from The Ringer, and I want to tell you about the Press Box podcast. The Press Box is a podcast for anybody who likes news, whether it's about sports or politics or pop culture, and wants to understand how that news really gets made. We have new shows every Monday and Thursday. We have long interviews with everyone from John Krakauer to Joe Buck. Your social media feeds are bursting with information every day. Let us help you sort it out. Join us on the Press Box.
This episode is brought to you by Lucasfilm and Disney Plus, presenting an all-new Star Wars series, The Acolyte. Stream the two-episode premiere June 4th and witness an investigation into a shocking crime spree where secrets will emerge and no one is safe from the truth. The Acolyte, two-episode premiere, streaming June 4th only on Disney Plus. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we have Kevin O'Connor. That's right, KOC is on the show, and we're going to talk combine, NBA combine invitees and snubs. And of course, we got to talk about Bronny James and the Bronny James draft plan. So there's a lot to get into. We'll also talk about the best college basketball players in the 24 draft and talk about which player in college basketball will be the first one off the board. We'll also talk about testing the waters, some of the returnees that are possible. And we'll do some shout outs and talk about some of the notable commitments because there are some big names that are on the move in college basketball. We'll also talk about the Tom Brady roast because I was there and that was a fun time. Cousin Sal was also in the building sitting front and center there with Guillermo. So shout out to Cousin Sal. Kyle, anything else before we get into today's episode?
It's a day of closure. It's a day of good news. It's a day of allies and our boy KOC. It's all coming up next, but first.
Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. It is Monday, May 6th, and it is not a manic Monday. Kyle Mann is in OKC, so you know what we do here. We pivot to KOC. We got Kevin O'Connor on the show. KOC, good to see you, man.
Great to see you too, Tate. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. You and I, we were doing almost 6 weeks on Through the Ringer. We were doing Monday shows together. We got to do the pre-production schedule. We were having a great time. Some schedules had to shift a little bit. So we are now not doing that on Through the Ringer. So I missed you on these Mondays. And it's now, I'm very happy to have you on a Monday and in a very loose situation, right? This is OSP. This is the off-season KOC. So we get to just kind of shoot the shit. No one's really paying attention because, again, it's the off-season. But there is a lot to talk about. One of the things we have to talk about is the NBA combine. So let's start there. Just your take on the combine as it currently is constructed right now. Is it good? Is it bad? Do we love it? Do we like it? What's the temperature check on the combine right now?
Well, from a media perspective, it's kind of a circus.
That's good. We like circuses here in college basketball. The college basketball is a circus. That's great.
Maybe a circus, not in a good way necessarily. It's just kind of wild with all 10 different players out there at tables at one time and, 10 times the media circling around and getting questions and all that. It's wild. It's crazy. It's fun. But I think from an NBA perspective, this year will be a lot more interesting because all the players in the class are now required to go through the process. Medical information will be sent to a certain number of teams. Now they're required to do interviews. Players in the past, agents were able to steer them away from certain teams more so than they'll be able to do now. And so from an NBA perspective, I think the combine will be far more useful, putting players through physical testing, mental testing, and everything else. So I think for NBA teams, this could be the best combine that we've had in years. But from a media perspective, I look forward to seeing how it changes. I think that'll be very interesting as well.
Yeah, no ducking, no dodging. Like you said, if you're there, you have to go through all of the testing, which is a fascinating wrinkle, because if you look at the 78 players that were invited, we also have the G League Combine. And last year we had eight guys, I think, was from the G League Combine that ended up getting invited to Chicago for the actual Combine. So there is a chance if you're in the G League group, you can get invited up to the Combine, which brings us to the Combine list, because there were some snubs. There were some notable invitees, and the snubs were really the first talking point. Caleb Love from North Carolina and Arizona was a snub. He got invited to the G League Combine. Jaden Ledee, who was one of the best players in college basketball last year at San Diego State, he's at the G League Combine as well. Walter Clayton Jr., Blake Hinson from Pittsburgh, who stood up on, you know, in Cameron on the press table saying, you know, are you not entertained? He's not going to be invited. Eric Dixon from Villanova, Marcus Domask from Southern Illinois and Illinois this past year. So some notable names, some notable snubs. We get snubs every single year, but I feel like this year it's gotten heightened, KOC, because of one notable name that was invited. And of course, we're talking about Bronny James. So when you see Bronny James as one of the 78 guys, do you say, of course he is? Or do you raise an eyebrow? Like, what was the reaction? Because in the basketball community, there's been, you know, some people are saying nepotism. Some people are saying, of course he's invited. He was a top 100 kid last year at McDonald's All-American. What say you when you see his name on the list?
Of course he was invited. He's the son of LeBron James, and LeBron is an upcoming free agent, and everybody's going to want to talk to Bronny James. So I think with him, it's kind of, I would have been shocked if he wasn't invited. If we saw Bronny like on the G League invite list, that would have been surprising to me. I think with Bronny, look, he is not ready for the NBA. He's nowhere near close. He shot below 20% on pull-up threes. He shot below 30% on catch-and-shoot threes. He is an active defender, but not a lockdown guy. He's not primary shot creator, even though he's only 6'2". He's nowhere near close ready to the NBA. With that said, he is the son of LeBron James, and I think teams are going to at least be intrigued on getting an opportunity to talk to him. This could be the last chance, because he could transfer. He could go back to school. And, you know, might not be for another 2-3 years if he ends up staying in college for a while that teams get an opportunity to talk to a freshman player a year ahead or 2 years ahead of when he could be in the NBA. And plus, I'm sure some teams might be trying to find out information of the plan this summer with involving LeBron.
So you think they're bringing in Bronny, and, you know, he has to do the interviews, he has to do the measurables. What do we think about that, by the way? Because we know how this gets worked in college. Like, Bronny was listed at 6'4", 200 and, you know, 75 pounds or whatever made up number they had there. But what happens when he goes and it shoes off, we get the measurables in? Like, what does that reaction look like within the media sphere?
I think most people know he's not actually 6'4", but I look forward to seeing what that actual measurement is. What would you say? Like 6'1.5", 6'2", something like that?
I think 6'2" would be a good number to post if you're Bronny. It's kind of, remember when Kyler Murray was going to get measured and everyone's like, man, if he could just get close to 6 feet, that would be a big win. I do think that is kind of what Bronny's going for. It's like, if he can get close to 6'2", if he's 6'2.25", we're okay, right? We're looking, we're saluting, we're saying, that's right. Put on some shoes. He's around 6'4". That's good enough to be a point guard in the NBA size-wise. But if we're coming in 6 foot and, you know, 7/8 inches or whatever number it is, and it's trying to, they're trying to boost the numbers and round up, that's not going to be good, Kevin.
Dude, I mean, dude, you're 100% right. And I mean, you say like that's tall enough to be an NBA point guard, and that would be true if he's at 6'2.25". But then the question will be, well, how much of a ball handler is he ever going to become? Because right now he's more of that kind of connective piece, that the guy who in theory is supposed to be a good spot up shooter, a cutter, a mover without the ball, and like he can run a secondary pick and roll, but
he can't play the two.
He can't play the two, and also he can't play the one right now. We saw that at USC when Isaiah Collier was out for a stretch and he was given more responsibility. We saw it even when Collier was playing and Bronny was coming off the bench. He is not yet anywhere close ready to be a guy who is a primary creator at the college level, never mind at the NBA level. Like, his handle needs to come a far, far away for that to ever be a thing.
So Bronny's technically testing the waters, right? I mean, that is the term that we like to use. So he is in the NBA pool. He's one of the 78 players. I want to go through some of the other names that are testing the waters, some names that could be interesting. They could come back. Some names that I know that you have some interest in as well. One of them is PJ Hall at Clemson. We saw him in person. I want to talk about him and Keyshawn Johnson from Arizona. We saw them both in person at the West Regional. PJ Hall is a guy who technically could go back to college. He looked good last year in the scrimmages. So good. In fact, I was texting you. I said, Ricky Council IV and PJ Hall, sign me up. You said, I think PJ Hall is going back to college. I was like, okay, so there goes my scout for the combine scrimmages. But what do we see for him? Like, trying to forecast what his NBA future looks like. Is he one of those guys that could get more going back to college, or is he an NBA all-in type?
I think he's still one of those guys who could potentially get more going back to college. But at the same time, all it takes is one team to fall in love with you. And, you know, in the draft guide, I compare him to like post prime Blake Griffin, which I don't mean that as an insult at all. I mean that as a major compliment.
You're saying Detroit Piston Blake Griffin? I mean, that guy was nasty.
Oh, maybe a little past that.
Okay, a little bit past that. Okay.
I mean, PJ Hall is just like a really good connective piece. He's a glue guy. I remember a couple of weeks back, like in reference to Bronny, Colin Coward did a huge monologue on Bronny on The Herd. And he referenced my draft guide and he's like, well, the 55th pick, the Lakers should take Bronny. Currently in Kevin O'Connor's draft guide, he is PJ Hall, who he refers to as a glue guy. You're not going to draft a screener with the 55th pick. A screener? Give me Bronny.
So I like that battle. There's PJ Hall versus Bronny for the 55th pick. That's good.
Yes. And I mean, in some respects, you know, I get what, you know, Colin Coward is saying, because PJ Hall from an NBA perspective is just kind of a boring player. So you might want to take a shot at someone else, but boring players are important. He is a good screener. He could become a good shooter. He's improved. I think the soft touch that he has in the paint, hopefully that translates to better three-point shooting numbers moving forward. But, I mean, the screening ability, the reliability, the toughness, like, Clemson fans know PJ Hall, how good he is. But from an NBA perspective, maybe he's someone who ends up going undrafted.
And tries to find a team that likes him, like you said. Keyshawn Johnson is a guy. We talked about Bronny's measurables. I think Keyshawn Johnson, when he measures, he's going to have some eye-popping measurables where teams are going to take a chance on him, and maybe he moves up some boards. We saw him in person. There's a little bit of a wow factor with him. He's got some great experience. A little bit older, obviously, but your thoughts on him? Is he a guy that could go to – I'm just trying to think of some of these older guys that could go to the combine and have someone kind of say, well, he's actually a first-round grade, or like he's a guy that should be drafted. Is Keyshawn Johnson one of those guys?
Yeah, I think he's the type of guy, you know, he's a senior, he's going to be 23 on draft day. And as you said, the measurables are going to be probably awesome. I think athletically, the way he's going to test will be off the charts. But teams are going to want to be looking at those shooting drills. And how does he look as a three-point shooter? There was inconsistency there. He made only 25% of his threes and 61% of his free throws over 4 years at San Diego State. And he shot the hell out of the ball at Arizona. How real is that? Teams are going to want to test that out. So if the shooting looks for real, I think that's the type of thing that could propel him into potentially early second, late first. And if the shooting doesn't seem real, then, you know, we're talking, I think, mid second, late second, despite those measurables, because you got to be able to shoot, man. Like that's like, you have to be able to shoot. You see that throughout the NBA playoffs. If you are a average or below average shooter, teams will treat you like teams used to treat Andre Robertson and Tony Allen. Like, you are just the guy they're not defending on the floor. So that's going to have to be what he proves above everything else. Cause like we talked about when we were watching those games in person, he looks huge, right? Like, he looks even taller.
He looks 6'10". Yeah. I mean,
yeah, he looks taller than 6'7".
Yeah, I really like Keyshawn Johnson. Another old guy, Baylor Shireman, one of the best pick and roll players in college basketball when you look at points per possession. And I think he's a guy with his shot, you know, with his kind of leadership, some of those tangible things or intangibles that he has personally. I think he's another name, Baylor Shireman, that, you know, is going to get some buzz at this combine. So just throwing that one out there as well.
Versatile, Tate.
So versatile. Right.
Like, he can shoot off screens and run a pick and roll for you. I'm going to have Shireman in my updated draft guide next week. But the only question with him is athleticism. I mean, he doesn't log many blocks, many steals, but the offensive game can fit anywhere.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people just, if he doesn't take shots away from other guys, which can be a knock, you know what I mean, when the right guy's supposed to be shooting, I think Baylor can be a plus player. There's a lot of interesting players. Dalton Connect is one of those players that you and I have observed and fallen in love with, but he is 5 months older than Anthony Edwards. So you have a guy like that, Dalton Connect, who could be a shooting guard, starting shooting guard type, but he is older. We've seen older guys get drafted early. What's the ceiling for Connect? You know, let's say he goes to the combine. He is incredible. He looks the part. Like, is he top five? Like, is it top 10? Like, where does he really fall in? How high could he possibly go?
I think top five is probably a bit much for Connect, considering he'll be 23 entering his rookie season. Like you said, like, it's hard to believe he's 5 months older than Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Edwards looks like freaking, you know, D Wade right now. So I would stick with that guy that's 22.
I mean, he looks like more like someone from Carolina to me.
He's getting close.
It's crazy. But Connect, I have him sixth on my board that's public right now. I think he'll end up on my personal board probably closer to 8 to 10, just because the age aspect, and typically you're going to want to swing for upside with the top 10 pick rather than Connect. But I don't want to dismiss upside with him. Just because he's older doesn't mean he doesn't have upside. Whether it's someone like years ago, obviously Draymond Green being the number one example out of the second round as an upperclassman, or more recently Desmond Bane going to Memphis. Just because you're an upperclassman, just because you're around 22 or 23 years old, doesn't mean that you can't improve in the NBA. And with Connect, it's his first year after transferring to Tennessee, and he did get better over the course of the season. He more was put on his plate. He became the guy there. He was empowered.
He became a better defender. Yeah.
He improved a lot defensively. So I think with Connect, just because he's older doesn't mean that he can't get better. And like you mentioned it earlier with Shireman, the, you know, pick and roll ability and the off ball shooting, Connect is similar in that sense too, where he could become a guy that is used all over the floor. Like I think like a Bojan Bogdanovic, somebody like that, where he can be used as an on-ball shot creator at times and can get a bucket for you like he did many times for Tennessee this year, scoring 30 plus. But he can also be someone who's just a lethal spot-up threat, guy used off screens and handoffs and can kind of barrel his way to the basket. So to me, the versatility can make him, you know, a pretty versatile threat at the NBA level. And I don't see any reason why he can't get better. It's just he is older, and that's the knock against him.
Yeah, that 10 to 14 range, you know, Cam Johnson range is what I like to call it. Like, you know, 11 somewhere in there. That'd be great for Dalton Connect. There are five starters from the UConn National Championship Huskies that will be at the NBA Draft Combine. That is the first time since 2012. So that is a tip of the cap to Dan Hurley. We get to see Cam Spencer. We get to see Donovan Clingan. We get to see Alex Caravan. Caravan's the one that's kind of Dan Hurley, I got a quote from him. He said, quote, if he's going to be a first round pick consensus, if you're going to be valued that way and invested in that way at the NBA level, you have to go. Short of that, I think he would come back and be one of the stars of college basketball. Alex Caravan, is he a consensus first round guy? Could he get there if he has a great combine? Where do you stand on Caravan?
Caravan's not a consensus first round guy.
So bring him back. We need him in college basketball.
Yeah, he's more.
Let us
more
have
like
him, KOC.
I'd say he's more likely a mid-second to late-second guy. And with that said, though, he is the type of guy that I could see like raising his draft stock, because with Caravan, you have the shooting ability as kind of like a foundational, you know, ability for him. But he's more than that. He can attack closeouts. He's aggressive on those drives to the basket. We've seen him show the ability to back down his defender as well. So I think with Caravan, he's more than just spot up guy. And so with him, it's similar to a lot of these guys, proving what he is athletically. If he's playing in the scrimmage, what does he look like defensively, defending on a switch against a smaller, quicker guard? If he's defending like a Mark Sears out there, and we saw him have success against Sears. So like, what does he look like defensively? How does he survive athletically? Does he show any new wrinkles offensively? Somebody's like, some of these second round picks, it's so flat. Like this year, I mean, this is true a lot of years, but especially this year, I think from like 15 to 50, it's, you know, to each your own, like with the type of players that you desire and what you're looking for. So all it takes is one team to say, we view you as the right guy for us at the 28th pick, and suddenly you're first round draft pick. But with Caravan, you know, the fact he's going to be 21, fact, he is not, doesn't have necessarily as much upside as some of these other guys, more likely a second rounder.
Yeah, so if Caravan comes back, that's huge for UConn. I think that could be something that happens. What about Cam Spencer? I mean, he is kind of the engine that made that UConn offense work. He obviously has a lot of savvy, a lot of basketball know-how, seems to have a lot of mental toughness, like he's not afraid of any moment. Is there any sort of, like, I'm pretty shocked. When I saw Cam Spencer's name on the combine list, I was pretty shocked. Not to say that he shouldn't be there, but, I mean, I didn't know what his NBA range was. I mean, is he a guy that could get drafted?
He is a guy that could get drafted, but wow. You said earlier how, so being younger than Anthony or older than Anthony Edwards, he's like a year and a half older than Anthony Edwards. He's already 24 years old. With him, teams are going to want to see the medical because he had that hip issue that required surgery years ago. So they're going to want to see the medical, what that looks like above all else. But, Cam Spencer's shooting ability, the creation ability, the fact he's just, the dude's an MF-er, like the way he plays. Mm. Out there on defense, he brings it every single possession. He has clear NBA upside, but the medicals, I would think, going to be the thing that teams are going to want to look at above all else, because we know who he is as a player on the court.
Yeah, I've been looking at the mock drafts. There's a lot of mock drafts out there. I was looking at ESPN because I wanted to see where they have these UConn guys and where they have the college basketball guys in general. So I made a list of all the college basketball guys that are coming off the board according to them. So the first one is Donovan Clingan, one of these UConn starting five that'll be there. Do we think that Donovan Clingan is the first college basketball player off the board, and how high is that? I mean, could it be number one? I know when we were at the Final Four, there was some smoke. It could be number one.
I think it could be one of four guys: Clingan, Castle, Dillingham, or Cody Williams. Wow. One of those four, I think, could be the first college basketball prospect draft, and that'll depend a lot on what happens lottery night next weekend, because it's going to be like with Clingan, could he go number one, you asked? Maybe if like the Memphis Grizzlies end up with the number one pick, because the Memphis Grizzlies have a clear need for a rim protecting five like him.
I would be so scared if I was Memphis with the beat, you know what I mean? Like that's all I would think about. Yeah. I would not be able to do that.
I know, seriously, but seriously, especially out of UConn and everything too. Mm-hmm. But I think like you look at all the other teams in the top 10 though, like Detroit has Jalen Duren. Charlotte has Mark Williams. San Antonio has Victor Wembanyama. Portland has DeAndre Ayton. Utah has Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen. Houston's got Şengün. Like, there's a lot of teams that in the top 10 that have centers already. So I think it would have to be a particular team that needs a center, which is why I think it's interesting to think about still Castle because of his perimeter ability. It's far more versatile, and Dillingham because of the shot creation, and then Cody Williams, who like his stock has really fluctuated after missing time, and really he didn't play a lot. He's coming off the bench for Colorado in March, but Cody Williams was number one on a lot of boards at times. He's 6'8", 6'9". He's versatile. He can handle the ball. He was reluctant to shoot at times, like, but if he proves he's if he proves that he is a good shooter at the combine and through pre-draft workouts and all that, I could easily see Cody Williams popping up boards because, like, he has the personality, he has the makeup, he has the genetics with his brother Jalen Williams thriving for the OKC Thunder. Kyle Mann will see you this week in Oklahoma.
So. That's right. You'll see it in person. We'll have to ask him about it.
But Cody Williams, to me, like, he's kind of that guy that's been a little bit forgotten about as a potential number one pick and definitely perhaps the first college player drafted.
What's the shades of for Cody Williams, if you had one? I mean, I know that's really tough, and a lot of times, you know what I mean, you try to throw these comps out. I've been trying in my mind. I've been looking at the landscape of the league, like I've been looking at rosters, and I've tried to compare guys in this draft to current players, because I feel like a lot of times people are like, he's the next John Stockton. You're like, wait a second, what? Like, that's putting a lot on him. So I was trying to compare him to, like, you know, like if I'm looking at Rob Dillingham, I'm saying best case scenario, Tyrese Maxey, worst case scenario, Bones Highland, right? You know, like you get a range of what it would be. Is there something for Cody Williams? Like, where does he fit in? Is he a three? Is he a four? Is there like a guy that looks like him, plays like him that you see?
I mean, the shades of comparison I have in the draft guide right now, and I'm open to feedback, open to a better one, is Jalen Rose. Just kind of that kind of taller, lankier shot maker like Jalen Rose was in his prime. And I don't think, and Jalen Rose could play make a little bit too. So I don't think it's perfect. I prefer more contemporary comparisons just because, like, you know, people looking at the guide, a lot of people might not know who Jalen Rose was other than like a TV, you know, personality.
That's
right?
Crazy. Yeah, true. Right.
Like, you know, like there's a whole generation that doesn't know how great Charles Barkley was for that matter, right? Of younger kids. So, but Jalen Rose is the name that I currently have in there. I don't think it's perfect, but no comparison is. But Cody Williams is very, very, I interviewed him over the weekend for, the Ringer's NBA draft show, because we're going to do like a series of prospect interviews. And he's got like a really, really good, like he's going to interview well with teams. Mm. He can just like it was by far the smoothest conversation. Like we can just talk basketball like we're buddies. Like he just knows the game. He knows the NBA, clearly loves basketball. Like I think that love is there with him like it is for Jalen Williams. They're different. Like Cody Williams is quiet. You know, he's more stoic on the court. Jalen Williams is like bigger and bubbly and, you know, barking. Has a louder voice. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Literal barking. Yeah, Cody might be a little bit more reluctant to do that. But with him, it's just going to be about the shooting, man. Like he's never really been a 3-point shooter. He shot over 40% at Colorado, but it was like on 1.5 shots per game. And I asked him about that. And I was like, what do you have to do to shoot at a higher volume? And I think he knows above all else that that's what he's going to have to prove throughout this whole process. But if he does, maybe he goes number one. Maybe he's the first college player selected.
Wow, that would be an upset. On this ESPN board, they have Klingon, Dillingham, and then Shepard. I wanted to ask you about Shepard because Shepard, at one point, I mean, we're talking he could go number one, and he looked incredible. His hands looked great. And then it almost felt like he saw that he could go number one, and then he tanked his own draft status. I don't know what was going on. I don't know what was in his head, but that's what it looked like from the outside looking in. I'm not pointing any fingers. I'm not saying that happened, but that's what it looked like. So where does Reed Shepard sit right now as far as range? Like, I mean, obviously the talent to be a top three pick, but if there are people a little bit spooked by what they saw in the tournament at any level, I mean, does he drop a little bit? What does his range look like?
I mean, we talked about measurements earlier with Bronny James. I think that's going to be one of the interesting things that teams look at with Reed Shepard, whether it's height, you know, wingspan, and then athletically as well.
Hand
size. I mean, because even though he was like such a nuisance on defense at the college level, blocking shots, you know, flying around, you know, intercepting passes and all that, teams are going to wonder, how is that going to translate to the next level? And so with Reed Shepard, I like Reed a lot. You know, I think Reed Shepard's a perfect fit on so many different teams drafting in the top 10 right now with just his connective ability, the lethal shooting. I just really love Reed Shepard, but more realistically, we're talking like 6 to 12 range for Reed Shepard. I think that's what you should come to expect for a player who's on the smaller side.
Got great hand though. But if you're under 6 feet tall, you're not going to make it in the NBA now. I feel like that is the cutoff. I think we have two players in the league currently that are under 6 feet tall, at least listed under 6 feet tall, that are actually playing. Marquise Noel is one of them in Toronto, who was, you know, the March Madness superstar from last year. So there was a little
bit of playing,
and he's not playing, you know what I mean? Yeah. But he's up there. He's on the team. I so mean, it's hard to be under 6 feet. Yeah.
You're right. Like, it's hard to be even near 6 foot because so many, like, if you are near 6 foot, you are getting hunted. Like, teams are going to go after you. The thing is, you know, that's true for Rob Dillingham too. Like, he's 6'1" and he's even lighter than Reed Shepard, and he's not nearly as impactful on defense either. But how does a team, like, how do you weigh that creation ability and that shooting ability? Like, could it become that there's more value in having some of those smaller guys as kind of the extremes of athleticism are pushed against in the NBA? Because there's so many taller guys that are handling the ball now. Like, more teams are going to two bigs. Like, we're seeing that right now with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Rudy Gobert out there with Karl Anthony Towns or Naz Reid, LSU product Naz Reid. Like, I think our team's going to now say, okay, we can have a smaller guard, because you do have Mike Conley out there from Minnesota too. He's on the smaller side and he's on the older side. Like, will teams, because they have two bigs a lot of the time now, say, okay, we can survive with having a 6'1 guy, a 6'1 guard. So maybe it could work to some of those guys' advantage at this time in the NBA, whereas in recent years it's been like, no, we, you know, you just want a bunch of 6'6", 6'7" guys.
As long as you can defend and rebound at your position, that is the goal. But a lot of times, like you said, if you have Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid behind you, you're saying we're willing to sacrifice when we have someone who can set the table like Mike Conley is. So it is a give and take. It is a push and pull. We know how that goes.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
There are two guys that were put at one point number one in this draft class, and I want to talk about them because I do find where they are kind of interesting. Isaiah Collier is the first one with USC. We saw him in person in sweatpants. He did not play, but he looked like a good teammate. That was my big takeaway when we saw him in person at the Oregon game. Where does he fall now? Where does he fit in? I know he's been compared to Tyreek Evans, which is not necessarily the best comp as far as like
rookie of the year.
Yeah, rookie of the year, but did not last as long as many thought. So, I mean, where does Collier fit in? And like, what does the conversation around Collier look like right now?
I think with Collier, he's just going to be one of those guys that's a swing. And you're betting on, you know, 6'4" athleticism, bully ball point guard figuring out his jumper. And I think that's going to be the question with him above all else. We did see flashes of playmaking improvement at USC with decision making. I thought he was really sloppy at times, especially in the beginning of the season. But when he's playing a more composed in a composed manner, the creation looks better. And so he's one of those guys where, you know, I'd want to see him scrimmage and show off that more composed side and the shooting ability with him. What does he actually get to? He's been below 70% from the line a lot of times. He was at USC again. Three-point percentage tends to be closer to 30%. Is he going to be somebody that actually can improve there, or is he just going to be one of those kind of non-shooting point guards that just gets hot occasionally? And if that's what he is, then that's why the Tyreek Evans, Emmanuel Mudiay comps are there in the draft guide.
Yeah, I want to see how quick his first step is against those caliber guys in the combine, because if it is elite, if he can get downhill versus those guys in that combine situation, I think it does help raise his profile a little bit to say it's nice to have a guard that can get downhill and touch the paint. So I think Isaiah Collier could be one of those guys. The other guy who was a number one on some of the preliminary draft boards going into the college basketball season, Justin Edwards, who had a very roller coaster season, to say the least. I mean, he did have some bright spots. I mean, he's in this combine mix. He is, you know, by most mock drafts, still listed as a first round pick. Where does he fall? I mean, this is a guy who, like I said, was number one at one point, and now I see him around like fringe first round, early second round.
I mean, if the game he had against Alabama, where he was perfect from the field, 28 points, shooting the hell out of the ball from everywhere, that was like the peak of Justin Edwards, where like Kentucky fans were hoping to get that guy at the beginning of the season. But how many good games did he really have, Tate? I mean, he had an okay game for Kentucky in the tournament, but I can't think of many games where I was impressed by Justin Edwards, where if I didn't know he was a top 20 recruit,
right,
you would think this guy has no business entering the NBA draft. Like I've not been a big Justin Edwards fan. I think the shooting is completely theoretical. Even at the high school level, he wasn't necessarily a real guy. He was more a theoretical shooter. I'm not a big fan. I wasn't a big fan entering the college season. I had him ranked like 10 when others had him 1. And I have him as a second round pick right now. To me, he's just a swing. And, you know, you hope he works out and taps into whatever the idea is that you think he can become.
And he might be better, like kind of what we saw with Gigi last year, not to compare him to Gigi Jackson, but it might be better for someone like him to have to go a tougher route to kind of, you know, chip their teeth a little bit and become the player that we all want them to be. You know, sometimes when you get a little bit uncomfortable, you have to see who you really are and learn about yourself. So I think that might be a good thing for Justin Edwards. Two guys who I think are going to be top 10 picks that we like, Jared McCain, Devin Carter. Right. So I feel like those, if they go to the combine, have good combines, they're probably in that lottery range They haven't dropped off, you know, too much, right? We still like McCain. We still like Devin Carter after the tournament and how we sit right now.
Very much love Devin Carter. Another guy I interviewed. He told me a good story about when their coach was hired last year. First call they had, he's like, "You're gonna shoot 7 threes a game, and we're gonna improve your at rim finishing. We need you to become a 2 foot finisher." And both those things happened. Providence. That dude's fun, man. Like, for college basketball fans, was he one of the like 10 funnest players to watch? One of the 5 funnest players to watch?
I think the Big East obviously got their full cup of Devin Carter and fell in love with him. And once Hopkins got hurt, it was like, okay, well, it's just a one man band at this point. Swiss Beats. Let Devin Carter do what he's got to do. So, and he also came from Frank Martin, who's a very tough coach, right? So he goes from Frank Martin, transfers up there, plays for Ed Cooley. Ed Cooley leaves him to go to Georgetown. Like, he's just, you know, he's had so many things kind of happen in his basketball journey that have gone against him, but he still is so positive and looks like he loves the game. And obviously, second generation kid, dad played in the NBA. So he's just a great story too, once you get to learn about him. And like you said, once you start seeing him doing interviews, you're like, man, Devin Carter, what a great kid, what a great player, solid player that you feel like you could plug and play and give you good minutes at the next level. And top 5 lovable player, you know, and the Big East would agree because they feel like they get snubbed and everything. So I'll say top 5 just to make them happy, KOC.
It's going to be like a 10-year vet for sure, like without a doubt.
Yeah, right. I hope he goes to a team that has an infrastructure or goes to like a good situation, like, you know, a fun situation like a San Antonio or something. You know, who knows? Devin Carter could figure that out. That could be good. 2 other names I wanted to throw out that I feel like are under the radar, but they have top flight first round talent. Bub Carrington from Pittsburgh, a point guard that has size, who has know-how, who has a knack for scoring. I really think Bub Carrington is a name that's going to come out of this combine with some wow factor. And then Keyshawn George out of Miami. I think both of those guys out of the combine come out and people say, I really like what I see from them. Any thoughts on either one of those guys? Do they stand out to you at any level?
I mean, George is an interesting name. Both of them are for sure. But Keyshawn George, especially, like 6'8", shot creator, pull-up shooter.
He's better than Justin Edwards, in my opinion. You know what I mean? You see those 2 guys standing next to each other. It's like, I want George.
For sure he is. I mean, I think with they're the same age as well. With George, he could easily be a riser throughout this process, I'd say. Carrington too, no doubt.
Yeah, I love that. We were joking before we got on the air. I want to talk about this roast in a second, but one last thing. Jalen Brunson is our leader of college basketball. He is the face of college basketball at the pro level. We have anointed him. Oh, captain, our captain, please lead us and please let these NBA people know that college basketball matters. 2-time national champion. He's playing in Philadelphia. He's looking at his banners. Beautiful moment, all in all. I was looking back at the 2018 draft. Luka goes number 1. SGA goes number 2. Are we locked in now that Jalen Brunson would have been the 3rd pick in the 2018 NBA draft based on everything we've seen so far? Like, can we officially lock that in? Because now I can sleep good at night, KOC, to say in this now world that we live in, we all can look back and say Jalen Brunson should not have had 4 Villanova players drafted before him.
Yeah, Brunson goes 3 for sure. I mean, I think he surpassed Trae Young without a doubt.
Trae, Jaren Jackson, they're in that conversation, but I think he passed them both. Right.
Surpassed Mikal Bridges. I think without a doubt, Jalen Brunson goes 3rd in a 2018 redraft. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Like, to me, it's a clear cut top 3.
Right. And he might
who else is even in that?
He might be fighting top 2, top 1. You know what I mean? And who knows? The Mavs might have had the top 2 picks in the 2018 draft. You know what I mean? That's the funniest part about how these drafts work.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that nuts? Like, that really is 3, like, MVP. MVP voting is announced Wednesday, but Brunson could be 5th. He could finish 5th on top. That would be 3 guys from the same draft class with 2 of them being on the same team for years.
Yeah. I mean, and we got to watch him in the playoffs. And when Luka goes down, Jalen would step up. It was, you know, it feels like we learned a lot about them. Also, DeAndre Ayton might not even be in the top 10 of that draft at this point. So, and Simons is probably drafted before him, who is, you know, now on his team in Portland. So fascinating stuff to look at that. KOC, I'm excited for the draft. Do you have any, are you going to be at the combine? Like, are you going to be locked in L.A. watching the playoffs? Where do you stand on that? Is it worth going? How do you feel about it?
Maybe. Okay. I'm not sure yet. I have a lot on my plate for next week, and I'm undecided. I'll figure out by middle of the week. I feel like I'm talking to
a college basketball recruit in the portal. You know what I mean? That you're like very diplomatic. You're like, I'm undecided. We'll see how I feel on Friday. I'm like, what is going to change?
I just got so many things I got to juggle. It's like May and June get crazy. So.
Yeah. And then we got Summer League in July. We're all going to be back at Summer League. At least that's the word on the street. So I'm excited for that. We get to see these players in person. And I do think, you know, last year there was so much hype with Wimby and Scoot and Brandon Miller. And like, what does everybody look like? Summer League was kind of running rampant. A lot of people there. This class is so quote unquote bad and, you know, kind of looked over that I think this Summer League, we might be able to have some more fun, you know, maybe get some more access, get some more exclusives. Totally. So I'm feeling good about it, and I'm excited for this draft class. So
I hope we zag like when everybody else is like, "Yeah, this class is interesting." Yeah. I hope the Ringer's like, "Let's send out a whole crew.
Let's zag." That's shout to Gonzaga. It's time to zag on this program. We love to see that KOC the draft show. If you're not listening, go listen. KOC and Kyle Mann. But you're doing these interviews like you said separately. So there's a lot of good stuff over there on the Ringer NBA draft show with Kevin O'Connor. We love to see that. One last thing before I let you go, KOC. I went to the Tom Brady roast last night. And you are a big Patriots fan, Kyle. If you want to come back, I don't know if you're listening, Kyle. He's back. Let's go. I saw something beautiful last night, fellas. You guys are two New England Patriots fans. I feel like I saw the hatchet was officially buried in real time in the forum, and Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Robert Kraft, everybody was happy. And it seemed like they were on the same page. I had a guy in a Matthew Slater jersey in front of me crying, as Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft took a shot together in between Kevin Hart. So I just wanted to tell you guys, I saw something special. Kyle, you were watching. Do you feel like something, like you feel like you're settled now? Because I know Patriots fans, it was a long, long battle and a lot of infighting, but it feels like it's all done now.
Yeah, as I was putting together the final parts of the Bill Simmons two-part extravaganza yesterday, he said something, he wanted to like maybe do like a little intro about the roast, but the roast was so like well done. He was like, I'm actually going to do a segment. This one's going after Pearl Jam. It was like an 18 minute segment. It was great. But he said something at the end that I didn't even think about. He was like, that was the closure that Pats fans didn't think we were going to get. Probably didn't even know we needed. Like this thing kind of broke apart in three pieces. And they were all together and, you know, they begrudgingly took a shot on stage together, which was incredible. Shout out to Kevin Hart I wouldn't have had the balls to like tell those two guys to come here. And, you know, it was live too. And it's like, it didn't happen super fast. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, they're there. Here we go. It was like, it was kind of slow. And it was like Bill Belichick kind of had to be convinced a little bit. And, you know, Kraft was kind of wobbling up to the stage and it was just like, it wasn't clean, but he got it done. And so I thought that was really nice. And I felt, I don't know, Kevin, if you felt this as a Pats fan, I felt like I had a leg up on America watching just all the guys back there, like Matt Light. Who the fuck has talked about Matt Light?
Nate Solder,
Nate Ebner. You know what I mean? Like these type of guys. Yeah, and then, you get Rodney and then all those guys. And shout out to Gronk for being a good sport. But I felt like I had like a little more information than the rest of the country. And I felt like it was for me. Really, for sure. It was great.
Like I laughed at the Nate Ebner joke. Like, Nate Ebner has three rings?
Right.
Most people were like, who the hell is that? What does this mean? But I enjoyed it. I'm only 2 hours into it. I have 1 hour remaining.
When he said that, that was so funny.
I have 1 hour
remaining. Like in Christopher Nolan movie. Yeah.
Kevin's like, I'll save that last hour.
Well, I mean, I had to go to bed last night. It was getting late. But I'll watch the final hour today and see the shot they take and all that. But you're right, Kyle, like what Bill said on the pod, it was closure that we needed that we didn't know we were going to get. It just feels really good to watch. It's fun to watch, see all those guys busting each other's balls. And I didn't expect it, to be honest with you. I thought it might just be okay, but it's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to watch that final hour today.
And I think we're running out of room on like the Bill Belichick is actually cool corner. Like, I think we're running out of space there. Like, it's not even going to be, we're not even going to get any credit for that anymore. Like, it's between this and then, you know, what he's going to be doing next season and the draft that he did. Like, it's just, it's We can't even say I told you so, because it'll just be like, yeah, everyone knows that now.
It's true. I mean,
it's a foregone conclusion.
It is. I used to watch his press conferences every Wednesday when I was like 11, 12, 13 years old, like as a young Patriots fan, because I used to be I would absorb myself in the insight, not just like football insight, but life insight. He was awesome.
Yeah.
I always thought, even though he's like a dick after games sometimes, and sometimes he'd have his grumbly, annoying curmudgeon press conferences.
Yeah,
he always had those, but he also had his brilliant, insightful thoughts and comments on, you know, hard work and all that. And he's also just funny, and players loved him. You could see the way they all reacted when he went up there on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, he crushed it up there. He was great.
Yeah.
But Belichick's awesome.
Big win for Foxborough High School. A lot of stories about Foxborough High School. I thought they were the big winners on the night. Nikki Glaser was a huge winner. I mean, the Gronk joke that she had. I mean, Kevin, the best part about being live was that Kevin Hart was reacting in real time. So he was just like, what the fuck? That was incredible. Like, you know what I mean? He's like, that's how you do a roast. That was great. Ron Burgundy popped up. That was fun.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, it was going like, I went with my girlfriend Riley, and she was like, I feel like we're going to a Patriots football game. Because there were so many Patriots jerseys, like amongst the common folk, the people that were sitting down at the tables, they're all in suits, but the common folk, they're all in Patriots jerseys. So much so that there was a lady in front of us in security. She had a bag, like a Food Lion bag, of 10 jerseys, Tom Brady jerseys, that she was expecting Tom Brady to sign. And the security was like, he's not going to be signing jerseys tonight. She's like, are you kidding me? I came here from Boston to get Tom Brady to sign these jerseys, and he's not going to sign these jerseys. That was the energy that the building kind of had. It was a Patriots crowd. It was like a moment, like you said, it was this moment of closure. It was a beautiful night. I know we're spoiling it all for Kevin because he has to watch the last hour, but it was a great time. And I think roasts are back. I feel good about roasts. I think roasts need to be back, but it does feel like we're going to have like the best thing LeBron could do. This is what I thought about last night as I watched him. The best thing LeBron could do for his career is to go do the roast and have people actually roast him and be a good sport. Like Tom Brady was a great sport. You know what I mean? Throughout the whole thing, he could have had some issues. There was some vile stuff said about his family and his ex-wife. And, I mean, all type of stuff. But if LeBron does the goat roast like Tom Brady did, I think that would be my next move, because I think that'd be a win for everybody.
How many upside down book jokes do you think there's going to be?
Oh, my God. Kevin Hart walks out with an upside down book that he's reading as if it's the prompt. I mean, that's right. That's good. That's what we need. So I think we're team roast. I'm happy for you guys. I'm happy for Tom Brady. I feel like it was a big win. Also, Kim Kardashian was shit-faced. I just want you guys to know this. I saw it in person. Like
Did it happen after the booze, you think? And she was just like, all right, we're gonna just pour up now because I can't. That happened live. There's no way we can cut away from that.
Well, you had to be in your seats. It started at 5, but you had to be in your seats technically at 4:30. So like they were like, get all your drinks, go to the bathroom, do everything. You know what I mean? So like we got, you know, you double up on drinks. I think everybody was just like, I'm going to be here for the next however
many hours. Two doubles,
please.
Two doubles,
people were just ripping drinks, you know? And I think Kim Kardashian fell to that, which was great. The other part they didn't show on the Netflix roast, to give you like a little behind the scenes, Bert Kreischer was getting called out for like being lame, and like all the fat comedians like that had died lived like rock stars, but he's a loser and all this sort of stuff, right? And he pulls out of his jacket a bag of cocaine and flashes it to the crowd. And that whole bit, like if you watch it on the thing, like the crowd goes crazy, you know what I mean? They're like,
and you don't know why.
You don't know why, because they didn't show it. But that was like, he was like, I'm not a square, you know, and the crowd's like going insane. Tom Brady's dying laughing. It was like, oh my God.
Was it clearly a prop bag of cocaine? Like, was it a sandwich bag, or was it like a little actual, like,
look,
like
I don't want to rat on the dime bag. It looked like a bag. But it killed because it killed the joke. Like, you know, basically he's getting called a square, and he was like, I am the opposite. I am a circle.
I'm high right now. So what up?
So it was great. I mean, a lot of it was a great roast time and a lot of great roasters. And Nikki Glaser, I think, won the roasting as far as like the comedians themselves. But Tom Brady won the night. That's a big win for New England. Big win for Foxborough. Big win for you guys. So I'm very happy for you. Kevin, where can we find all your work? And then we'll do some shout outs and get out of here.
The Ringer's NBA Draft Show and The Mismatch. Those are my two podcasts. And The Ringer's NBA Draft Guide over at theringer.com.
You're the best, KOC. We want to have you back as we are getting closer and closer to the draft. We want to keep in touch with what's happening with the draft guide. So we appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks for filling in. KOC in for Kyle Mann while he's in OKC. Great times. And we'll have you back on OSP soon, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Tate. Thank you, Kyle.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
There you have it, Kevin O'Connor. He's the best. Appreciate him coming on the show. This is just like preliminary draft talk. We're just giving you a little bit of a taste of what it's going to be. And if you want to dive all the way in, like I said, go listen to the Ringer NBA draft show. They are doing that every single week. So shout out to Kevin. He's working hard on that. We got to do some shout outs quickly. The first one is a shot at my heart. Shout out to Cliff Amore. He has committed to Alabama over North Carolina. This was a big news. The big news on Sunday that North Carolina is still without a big man. They thought Cliff was their guy. He decides to saddle up with Clifford the Big Red Dog instead of North Carolina, and now Alabama and Nate Oates, they're talking preseason number one. And Amore apparently got offered $2 million, Kyle. That is what they're saying, that Georgetown offered him. I will like to report this is an official report. Every time that you see a number like that, it is completely fictitious and made up. So I just anyone that reports that $2 million was offered, I can promise you there could have been a package that could have gotten to $2 million or something like that. But there's no way in hell that Cliff Amore was offered $2 million. And if he was, then maybe the resignation should happen, because Georgetown, that's the most out-of-pocket offer I've ever heard of. But my sources are telling me that did not happen. But it does sound good. It sounds sexy that someone was getting offered $2 million. So Cliff Amore going to Alabama for less than $2 million. That is what I know. So if he got $2 million, he was not savvy enough to take the offer. Kyle, this is one that's close to your heart. Shout out to Norchad Omir. He committed to Baylor. He did not have a Tipton edit. He did it himself via IG, his own path. This is a big win for Scott Drew, big win for Baylor. One of our favorite players here on OSB. And Kyle, he's one of your guys. So what are your thoughts? Do you like Norchad at Baylor?
Yeah, I like it that it's Baylor. I like it that it's like the Johnnies didn't lose him to, you know, a lesser squad. Definitely stayed out of the Big East. So that's good. I'm happy for him. He's just one of those guys I'll root for wherever he goes.
You're glad that the Johnnies dodged him in conference, which I really appreciate that. That's how you know you're a real Johnny. Speaking of Johnnies, of the Johnnies, a.k.a. Patino University, I think I'm going to start doing this where we call Coach Cal U at Arkansas. We just find little monikers for each school. Patino U is good. Davon Smith from Utah is coming to play for the Johnnies. This is a big win. Kentucky had interest. Kyle Mann was telling us that Kentucky had academic issues. That's why he didn't get in. I'm going to say that Rick Pitino just won the recruiting war. That sounds a lot better to me. And he's going to go play for the Johnnies. So you're fired up, Kyle. You're excited. We got a good one.
Yeah. I mean, I look every week and I just type in St. John's. And then when there's nothing there, I type in Rick Pitino, and there was nothing there for a couple weeks. And I got a little nervous. But this is a big one. This is a big one. And there's, I think, some other dudes out there that still have St. John's in there, you know, leaning this way or that way. So I'll keep doing those two Googles, and hopefully we have days like today where it works. In that Google search, I also found that I just wanted to bring this up. Rick Pitino, here's the headline from redstormsports.com. Rick Pitino to be honored at the 2024 Panatha Gala, which is a callback to his Panathinaikos days. They're coming to Queens. They're coming to Queens to throw him the banquet. He didn't have to go. They came to him, and that's the type of planet that Rick Pitino is. He brings the Greeks to New York.
He is the sun. You know what I mean? We gravitate towards Rick, and the people in Greece said, "We will come to Queens to coronate you." And he said, "Perfect. See you then." Love sports. So good for him. Good for Rick Pitino. We love that. That is good. That is a big win in the news cycle. Some more notable commits. Sean Stewart from Duke, who is a really good basketball player, has committed to Ohio State. Want to shout out Ohio State. They have done some good work in Jake Diebler's first year there in the portal. And Sean Stewart's a big ad. Khalif Battle from Arkansas is committed to Gonzaga. So that's another big one. So shout out to Khalif Battle. Big name that must bust. I didn't know. I was confused. I thought he was going to recruit him, but it looked like he really didn't. So he's going to go play for the Zags. Posh Alexander, former Johnny turned Butler Bulldog, now is going to go play for Dayton. Big news there for Dayton. Shout out to the Flyers. Also, Nate Santos is withdrawing his name from the portal. He's going to return to Dayton. So some good news for the Flyers. We always love to see that. Shout out to the Parlay Kid. Duke Miles, my guy from High Point, committed to Oklahoma. Big upgrade there for Oklahoma and Porter Moser. So some big commitments. Another commitment that we got to point to. Bruce Pearl and Auburn have signed a 10-year deal with Nike. So Nike has officially dropped the bag, and they are going to be a force with Bruce Pearl. So watch out. Like, as Calipari is leaving Kentucky and getting out of Camelot, Bruce Pearl has seen a path. He sees a path to the top of the mountain, and Nike is going to saddle up with him. So that's a big win. One last shout out for me. Shout out to Rick Pitino, and shout out to the Villanova Knicks. That Philadelphia game, the closer there, 26 assists for the three Villanova Knicks. Rick Pitino was impressed. America was impressed. I have a soft spot for Villanova, even though Jalen Brunson talks to Kenny Smith about the 2016 shot. I still let it slide because how could you not like these Villanova kids? So love that. Love the shout outs. Kyle, I know you had a couple, and then we'll get out of here.
I've got two more. One of these, it could be Rick adjacent, which I'm sorry, I'm bombarding you guys. This is the headline from On3, great publication. College Football Players Association, that's not real, I don't think. I think that's like the idea. Calls for a non-employment model ahead of Pivotal Week. I guess this is being proposed to Congress. It's basically a hybrid model that Congress would have to like put into place that would not classify athletes as employees, but at the same time set a framework for collective bargaining. There's talk of a salary cap, which Rick was saying in jest. And if this, I keep checking to see if he's got anything to say, because he'll be one of the first.
Oh, he's especially got something to say.
Especially if it's college football and not college basketball, he can just be like, "We're brethren. I'm speaking up for them as well as for us." So I'm waiting to see who's got something to say about that. But these are the ideas that get thrown out there. And next thing you know, there's a salary cap and there's a lockout.
John Fanta just wrote a big piece on Fox Sports about like what the landscape looks like right now and how there's no amateurism. Yes, it is the wild, wild west. And they're trying to figure out some way to kind of cap it at some level. But I think the cat's out of the bag. And I think them trying to put in infrastructure is going to make it even more of a mess. Every single time the NCAA makes a new rule, it ends up becoming, unconstitutional. By the end of it all. So,
college basketball and the Constitution. We didn't think they had so much in common, but they really do.
Who would have thought when they drew that up, they were like, "This is going to impact college athletes forever."
The founding fathers. what did George Washington really mean when he made this country? Because this isn't up to snuff.
That was a part of the Shane Gillis George Washington tour. They had a whole college basketball section. That was good. Good stuff. Oh, man. So there we go. You got one more shout out?
Yeah, this one's a fun one. This is like, we may have even made a joke about this, but here's the headline from Kentucky News Radio, I think, or KSR, one of those things. Pope Francis was presented with a Mark Pope Kentucky jersey by a Lexington priest. And the quote says, "He loved it." He also got His Holiness to sign a bottle of Willet bourbon. So nice. The Pope did a jersey swap, and then the Pope signed a bottle of Kentucky bourbon.
Honestly, shout out to the Pope.
And a Pope jersey is just great. Like, there's gotta be more of those things that could be done with a little creative stuff. So I guess this is a Lexington cardinal or bishop, whatever is more appropriate for Lexington, Kentucky. I don't know if they have bishops over there, but he got it done, and I guess he made a connection through the Kentucky football team. So everyone kind of came together to get this done, and they put a fucking jersey with Pope on the Pope's back. So that's great.
imagine the Pope getting that request and getting that package. You know what I mean? That's got to be a great moment in Pope history, where he's like, they want me to put on this jersey. And it's like, yes, we need you, the Pope, to put on this Pope jersey.
And they sent me a bottle of bourbon with a return address.
Hey, send some bourbon.
But give it back to me. I need you to sign it.
Shout out to the Pope. It's now not a hat on a hat. It's a Pope on a Pope. That's what he's saying.
Perfect.
It's good. It's
love
good.
That.
We love that. Good times. Appreciate everyone tuning in. Shout out to KFC for coming to the show. Shout out to Kyle. Shout out to Tom Brady. I feel like Tom Brady, he beat the allegations last night.
He weathered
the
storm.
There was a whole lot of allegations.
It was a long storm, and he weathered it.
He weathered it all, and he's a cool dude. Look, there's some people that say it's crass when you flick off the whole crowd, but when people have been talking about your wife for 3 hours, your ex-wife, I think you're allowed to do that. So shout out to Tom Brady. He won us over, and big winner in the zeitgeist of American sports history. So we love to see it. Like I said, we will be back later in the week here on One Shining Podcast. We're going to have a fun guest. We're going to talk about some of these recruiting updates and get an insider, get a scooper to come on to help us out. So again, we'll see you later in the week, and enjoy the rest of your week here on OSP.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.